We start this hour out, as we do each and every Tuesday, by welcoming into the program our friend, writer, and critic, Colin Fleming. Hello, Colin.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
Well, I am also at sea, but for different reasons, so let's both come ashore, right?
That sounds like a plan to me. And you've got, some airing of grievances today. And part of this comes from the world of media. And let's start with the situation in Canada, the tragedy of the youth hockey players, the junior team from Humboldt, and how at least one Canadian journalist decided to discuss that issue.
Sure. In this case, it does happen to be someone from the media that you're referencing there and that we spoke about earlier. But I wouldn't put it solely down to a media thing. I just think we get a pretty accurate, like, sort of per capita cross-section of people in any walk of life, whether it's at Charles MGH Hospital, whether it's in the media, whether it's at the accounting firm. But in this case, this particular person, Nora Loretto, had a voice, after a fashion, as a kind of middling writer, writes on something like Medium 2, which is kind of like going down to the Boston Common and just being one of those people who says lots of things with a mic, with a megaphone. And after this tragedy, with these 16 people losing their lives and rending a community, sort of put the blame for money being raised on, as she put it, whiteness and maleness.
Yeah, which was, and I went back and read her piece, her comments, and then I read her awkward, not quite apology, which wasn't any better.
Right. I didn't go to the apology because I'm not someone for whom I give these kind of people a second thought. I don't think that's a good sort of use of energy or time. And I'm also not someone who goes around and says, well, we have to go after them, go for their job and dox them at work and all of that. Because I think sometimes with certain people, and I see more and more of them now in this world, you almost kind of go past anger and you reach this state where you actually, you pity them, how they got to be that way. Because to become this way and to use this as your soapbox right now or at any time, but especially right now, you have to have a kind of like gaping maw inside of you that you attempt to fill by whatever sort of plaudits you give your ego by going after others on the outside. And we should probably talk about junior hockey too, and hockey players in general. Like, you like hockey, right?
I do.
And you've probably known a bunch of hockey people in your life. They are almost always grounded people. I think if you listen to interviews from professional athletes, it's sort of hockey players are the ones that we connect with the most. And personally, for me as a writer, I learned a lot about writing in hockey locker rooms because there is just a kind of no BS flyover space. You find out what works with audiences, what doesn't, what's truly funny, what people are just humoring you on as funny. And these hockey players were living with these host families. So you're like 17, 18 years old. And you have to think about it. It's not just their actual families and their biological families, all of those relationships. It's this town. It's this community. It's the second line center helping the daughter of the parents he's staying with her homework. And to put this on whiteness, I mean, if this had happened in Harlem and it was a black basketball team, it just would be a different kind of tragedy that's more of a geographical reality than anything to do with this endless sort of cottage industry of race and gender, which people like Loretto are using for their own self-victimization business.
Well, and two things come to mind immediately, Colin, and I've been thinking about it a lot since you told me what we'd be talking about this week. One is this need that seems to exist in media, certainly, but in all of our lives lately, to blame. There's always the finger of blame, and there's rarely any understanding of people making mistakes or of knowing that there are some things that can just be left alone. Now, all right, I get that she's a Canadian journalist, but in the world of social media, there also seems to be a pattern of people feeling like they have to weigh in on every major news story, even if they don't know anything about it.
A lot of it is the green beast, you know, jealousy. I think it's quite simply down to that. And social media acts as kind of this steroid to bolster your envy of what you perceive others' lives to be, whose lives you aren't really in touch with so far as the reality of those lives go. Like, for instance, today, someone told me, who used to be an Esquire, an editor, a Robert P. Baird, robertbbaird.com, that I was not established enough to have fiction in a venue like that. And it's like, come on, dude. You know why someone's saying something like that to you. You go and you look up their life and what they do, and it's just this endless projection fest. And I think for most people, and this is heightened in our particular era, their problems are of the internal variety. Now, if you were someone in the Great Depression, your problems would have been of the external variety. But right now, a lot of it's on the inside, and people seek solve for what is happening inside of them by looking outward, pointing, getting the light away from what is going on with them, and then being able to say, oh, I'm a good person. Look at me. Look at how moral I am without actually having to do anything. And so when this Loretta went out and made these comments, we all know that there is a time and a place for things in life. You don't confront someone you have a grievance with at the wake for, like, their kid. You don't do that then. She never should have done this at any point anyway, but she was given a platform, and it's something like, when you're a dog and you're in a room with lots of meat, there's no dog who's like, you know what, I'm satiated. I'm pretty much done. The dog eats until it passes out, and that's what we have happening now with everyone in the blogosphere, Facebook, and so-called writers like this.
And another story that drew your ire involves the death of the police officer in Cape Cod and some of the reactions to that that, again, are just head-scratchingly, mind-numbingly stupid and poorly timed.
What's worrisome, too, is that these reactions that we ought to think of as beyond the pale are becoming utterly banal, and that terrifies me, because I think even something Orwellian does not conceive of the banality of the routine, horrible things we are saying all the time. So what you're referencing here right now is a Yarmouth police officer who was in his early 30s, has a wife in her early 30s, and he was a canine officer, and he was serving a warrant for someone who had remarkably, this is even more combined priors than you and I have, 111. And we are bad men of the downtown streets. And so these comments came out from a lot of people that are branded social justice warriors. Again, always with our labeling society, saying, oh, good, a roast pig, what white wine would you recommend with this? And one was like, one person was the wife of a former NFL player. These were people sometimes of means, frequently of means. And it's like, what type of family did you come from? And I'm kind of going to let the family off the hook and just say, what happened to you in life that you so self-imploded upon yourself that you became someone like this? And what on earth are you saying to your kids? Because most people don't have the wherewithal to buck trends and say, you know what, everything in this echo chamber is sounding one way, but I'm going in this different direction. And so out they came to go after this guy. And, you know, I know people have their issues with police officers, but I have news for you. People in every profession, it breaks down. There are some good people. There are a lot of rubbish people. There are some evil people. There are some great people. And I bet you it's the exact same thing for nurses as it is for police officers, as it is for hockey players, as it is for radio show hosts. So it's just utterly baffling and depressing to me.
And I think it's more of this seemingly pathological need some people have to make everything that happens in the world of note that people are talking about somehow get squeezed into their narrative, and this is an opportunity for them to go shrieking their comments to the world.
Right, and we always talk about kind of like invented facts, and what people often don't consider is that there is something that goes beyond facts. There's a hierarchy in terms of things. There is like perception. There are facts. But what pulls rank on everything is the truth. The truth is what owns us, It's what always catches up with us, and it's what we have to answer to and adapt to. But what people aim to do is to create narratives to live their lives to that don't necessarily often sync up with the truth, and then they go out and they find other people to help them in this process, and that those same people get that back too. So everyone lives to kind of just a narrative of their own invention. That's what a lot of modern therapy is, and more of us are on in therapy than ever before and on various medications than ever before. It's finding your narrative to live to. But when you do that, you are branching off from truth, which just reigns over all of us, and we are becoming more and more disconnected.
Let's go a different route for a moment. The Bruins finally lost a playoff game last night, but looking awfully good. And apparently, David Pastrnak just needed that little pep talk from you.
I know, right? I say the thing that he has hands like a plumber, and what do you know? He's pulling the puck through his legs in the low slot and shifting around the goaltender. I will say this. This sounds awful. I know he just is the youngest player to have 6 points in a playoff game, younger than Gretzky when he did it. Sometimes announcers get caught up with things in a game that are not as difficult as they actually seem to be to a hockey player. Like, remember when Carlson last year made that pass where he just kind of like airmailed it down the ice over a couple guys? That's not necessarily the finesse play that the layperson thinks it is. There's a lot of luck in that. You're kind of just wheeling and chucking it. But yeah, Pastrnak, and you can't fault him for that save last night. That was just, when you one-time the puck, you can't really pick to put it right under the bar. You're just trying to get good wood on it, hit the net, maybe pick a corner. But your man, the goalie, he was the problem last night. That was a very winnable game.
By the way, somebody in this conversation, and well, I know it's not me, has got a brand new website that is coming together nicely. Talk a little bit about that, if you could.
Yes, I have a new site, finally. It's Colin Fleming Lit, LIT.com, meaning literature. It's not me espousing that you should all go out and get lit, which some people think. It's like, hey, homage to just getting blasted. It's not literature. And so the thinking was that it would be kind of a one-stop destination for my admittedly kind of confusing career, where I do the thing where it's all the hockey pieces and then like the fiction in Harper's and then the music stuff in Jazz Times or The Atlantic or whatever, and all the radio things, because most people normally do just kind of like one thing. If they do fiction, they do a given kind of story. If they do nonfiction, it's just op-ed-y type stuff or classical music or whatever it may be. But I don't really do that. So I wanted a site that would have different sections so you could go in and kind of hang out for a bit. If you want to go to the Beatles tab and read lots of neat Beatles stuff, you can do that. If you hate the Beatles, fie, you're an idiot, Fleming, they're terrible, you can go read about whatever you might be interested in, like football or something like that. So the links haven't been uploaded yet, but they are a-coming.
ColinFlemingLit.com. Also, I have to ask you about this, too. You're the second person in the last few weeks who've asked me if I've signed up for Filmstruck. Tell me a little bit more about it. It sounds fantastic.
Oh, you have like a Filmstruck commercial. Yeah, I'm pretty well addicted to it. I mean, keep in mind, you have a life and I don't. I just work, so it's really like in my wheelhouse. But I didn't get it for a long time. It's an online film site, like a library there, too, keeping with that theme. And I just thought it was kind of going to be like a few Criterion films, and if you already have a bunch of Criterion films, that wouldn't have like an amazing selection. But you can pay like $100 for a year, and you get not just Criterion, you get all these like old film noirs, you get silent films, you get Godard films, you get Tarantino films, and you get a lot of the supplements with these films. So you want to watch the picture with the director's commentary, or I watched a wonderful Orson Welles starring short the other day, Back to Glennaskall, which is just kind of a picture he made with some of the actors from Othello when they were shooting that in the early 1950s, and they decided to do a ghost story. They had some time, and it's like, all right, let's kind of do this Patty Fletcher-esque ghost story, and it's a 15-minute film. It's like, huh, that is awesome. I cannot wait to rewatch that. So it's actually, I think, as far as I know, I have the Netflix and the Amazon Prime. This is the best. You can get a filmic education within just one rainy weekend where you're like, oh, I can talk to you about some film noir. Want to talk a little Buster Keaton? And there you go. Instant expert.
All right. You've sold me on Filmstruck. And before we let you go, next week we're going to be talking about a great album, the Live Who album. We've talked a little bit about it before. The Fillmore East recordings from April of 1968. And we're talking a lot over the next couple of months about 68, looking back on the 50th anniversary. And a little bird tells me that you're writing a piece that will appear in, well, let's say a well-known publication about this session.
Yes, very well-known music publication concerning rock and roll. Hint, hint, can't say yet. And it is a wonderful album. If you are someone who has collected bootlegs over the years, you conceivably could have been versed in this music going back to the early 1970s when it came out on the Trademark of Quality label. But the sound has been cleaned up. It's The Who before Tommy, and they play this mythic, Holy Grail-esque version of My Generation that I'd heard rumors of, but I never actually thought existed, that runs 33 minutes in which you can hear them birthing Thomas, the rock opera, on the stage like a year before the fact.
Talk about that next week, and look for that article coming soon in a well-known music publication. Colin Fleming with us every Tuesday on the program. Colin, thank you as always. We'll see you in a week.
All right. Thank you, my friend.